Well, we've got the local news hour. Deputy Clerk Kelly Robinson has details on the upcoming general election. Summit County Regional Transportation Planning Manager Caroline Rodriguez has transit and transportation update. And then Katie Wilson, Director of Sustainability with Vail Resorts Epic Promise, will be in or on the line to give us an update. And then Tom Picamole and Thomas Delfino with the film Shelter talk about their project and the work they're doing with Protect Our Snow. And we've got our first guest on the line. It is Deputy County Clerk Kelly Robinson. I don't know why that is a tongue twister for me. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for calling in this morning and giving us an update on this election coming up. So ballots have gone out as of yesterday?
Yes. I know the Colville area and the Camas area received ballots yesterday. I don't know. I haven't heard anything from anybody in Park City, so I'm not sure if they received theirs yesterday also, but they have been mailed.
Okay. Yes, I have not checked my mailbox yesterday, so I'm not sure yet if mine has arrived, but we'll certainly let you know, I'm sure, if they're not starting to show up today and tomorrow. I guess that would be about the timeline, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, tell us how many registered voters, how many ballots have we mailed out in Summit County?
We mailed out close to 13,000 ballots for this election.
Okay. And what kind of vote? I know that with mail-in ballots, we've had a much larger, substantially larger participation. Any sense of what you're anticipating as far as the returns and percentage of participation in this election?
We're predicting probably about 40% for this election.
Okay. And how does that compare with past years as far as a midterm kind of election?
Yeah, for a municipal year, that is higher because it's been typically anywhere from probably 15 to 25% in previous years. So it was up in the primary this year.
Yeah, that's substantial, isn't it? So is it a municipal,
yes, it is.
Are there municipal elections going on all over the country on these off years?
There should be, because most of your cities and special service districts are on the off years from the federal election.
Yeah, sure. So now the census is coming up in 2020, and just wondering, how are we doing in Summit County as far as being staffed up and ready to get accurate counts for that?
Well, hopefully well. We're not really involved in the census, so, you know, I can't really say, you know, how prepared they are. From the articles and that I've read, you know, they are gearing up to do the census.
Okay. And is there any impact that the counts have on the county clerk's efforts and voting practices, or is that a pretty independent thing?
The census is independent. It does affect your numbers and that going forward, but it doesn't really, you know, as far as I know, impact the voting for this year. Like I said, it might change, you know, the districts and that in the future, but for this year, it wouldn't affect them.
Okay. And then how about all the municipalities in Summit County? Can you give a rundown of the elections that are going on and what's happening with each of the municipalities?
Okay. So the only two municipalities of the six that are holding general elections is Oakley City and Park City. The rest did not have to hold an election this year. We do have the South Summit Fire District, which has an election this year, and then North Summit Rec has a tax question for the North Summit area, and the South Summit School Bond has a ballot for the South Summit School area.
Okay, and that ballot initiative for South Summit is around $87 million, I believe?
Yes.
Okay, and people will just basically vote yes or no on whether they want to, tax themselves to build the new high school for Summit County, for South Summit School District, and along with is that just it? And then they're going to repurpose the other buildings for other grade alignment, that type of thing.
Yes, it's what I've seen. That was my understanding.
Okay, and when people get their ballots and there is a that item on the ballot of whether to vote for or against the bond, what kind of detail is provided? Is there some kind of an overview of the bond and what it is providing and how much it will cost taxpayers?
Not on the ballot itself. It does not give an overview. On the ballot, it just, basically gives you the information of how much the proposed tax would increase, per household of a certain amount. But it doesn't go into detail as to what they're spending it on. I'm sure that, that they will be sending flyers and, information out, but it's not provided on the ballot.
Okay. And let's get a rundown of all the timing around getting those ballots mailed back before, before Election Day. What are the dates that our listeners need to pay attention to?
Okay, so if people are going to mail them, they need to be postmarked by November 4th, the day before the election. So they can be dropped in a drop box at one of our locations through Election Day up till 8 p.m. if they're going to put them in a drop box.
Okay, and where are those drop boxes? Can you give a...
Okay, there is a drop box at Colville City Hall, Oakley City Hall, the County Services Building in Camas, at the Park City Municipal Building, and then also at the Market on Snow Creek.
Okay. The Market, is it right there at the Park City Market? The drop box? Okay.
Yep, there is a drop box just inside the door there.
Oh, I see. Okay, great. And then what about people who want to make sure they are registered to vote, and is there some way that people can check that or even continue registration up until what date?
Yes, they can register online or in person through October 29th. And they can go to vote.utah.gov and check their registration. Or if they need to register, they can go there also.
Okay.
Registration on Election Day, it's treated as a provisional so that we can verify, their information. And if everything verifies, then we would go ahead and count that. So there is Election Day registration also.
Sure. Okay. And if you have mailed your ballot in and you want to make sure it has arrived, is there a way to check that?
They can, again, go to the vote.utah.gov or their welcome to call our office and we can verify whether we have received it or not.
Okay. And I presume there are some tabs on vote.utah.gov that are obvious that take you to that place where that can be checked.
Yes, there's different tabs on the vote.utah.gov depending on whether you're trying to register, track your ballot that you can, link to and go from there.
Okay. Great. Well, it's a busy time for the county clerk's office around the state, I'm guessing. Anything else?
Yes, it is.
anything else, Kelly, that you want to let our listeners know about with respect to the election?
The only other thing is that there is early voting October 22nd through the 25th, and then October 29th through November 1st from 8 to 5 here in our office in Colville. So if someone needs, that option, they can come over and we can help them out.
Sure. Okay. All right. Great. And as far as like absentee ballots and that type of thing, is if you're out of the country, how does that work if you want to still be able to cast your vote?
If someone is going to be out of the country, they can submit an application and we would, get that ballot out to them. And even if someone is going to be, in another part of the country during the election, we can also set them up to be mailed a ballot to wherever they're going to be so that they have the opportunity to vote.
Okay. How do they get that set up?
They would fill out the absentee form on our website.
Okay. And let's get
and
a...
And then we could
and that's the clerk,
get them out.
That's Summit County Clerk's website, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And that's summitcounty.org? And go to the clerk's office or voting.
On the clerk's office, and it takes you to the voting stuff.
Okay, great. Anything else?
All right. I think that about covers all of it.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling in. That is...
All right. Thank you.
Bye now. Deputy County Clerk Kelly Robinson to give us an update on voting. On the line, Caroline Rodriguez is here to talk about her active transportation plan, which was presented to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting last week, I believe. Thanks for joining us, Caroline. Are you there?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So let's first start off. You reviewed the existing conditions for active transportation. Can you kind of give an overview of what those are right now?
Sure. I think one of the most important things that came out of the existing conditions, actually, well, two things. The first is our mode split here in Summit County between walking trips, biking trips, and transit trips. And our walking and biking mode split, and that refers, of course, to how much of our population that are taking trips are doing it via walking and biking, transit, or a personal vehicle or some other mode. So sure. For our mode split here in Summit County, our walking and transit mode split is lower than both the Utah average and the national average. Conversely, our bike mode share is just a touch higher than the Utah average or the national average. But I think what it demonstrated overall is that there's really a great potential for significant change in walking and biking here in Summit County. And a lot of that is going to depend on improved conditions for biking and walking. And that goes to the second thing that came out of our existing conditions review. And that was there are a lot of perceived barriers to walking and biking here in Summit County. Even though we have a very robust trail system, people still perceive that there's maybe conditions that are unsafe or that there's facilities that are lacking or that there's lacking connectivity, for example. Maybe there's a sidewalk that somebody would use, but halfway through their trip, the sidewalk just ends. So it's those types of barriers that were identified through the existing conditions review.
Okay. And so can you kind of talk about the inventory of facilities then? There are these other modes, which include, what, tunnels, pathways, buses?
So, yeah, well, when we're talking about mode split, it really means are you walking? Are you biking? Are you taking transit? Are you carpooling? Or are you driving alone? Or are you doing something else entirely? So that's just a piece of the existing conditions. The existing conditions really consisted of a public survey, an analysis of collision and safety data from the Utah Department of Transportation, and then review of some previously conducted statewide survey information from a survey instrument called the Utah Travel Survey.
Okay, and you'd mentioned just a minute ago that there are perceived barriers. So what... From your report and your study, what are the barriers that people need to overcome to get out of their single occupancy vehicle?
So a lot of it, I think a lot of it from the public has this perception that certain intersections maybe aren't safe to use either for biking or pedestrian. And what we found in our analysis through UDOT data is that actually, the data shows that, you know, very, very few crashes have occurred. And when you look at the type of intersection, it actually performs very well. Now, I will say that I think sort of as planners, we have this ongoing struggle. And, you know, my feeling is that, well, if an intersection is perceived as dangerous, whether or not the data says it is, does that not make it dangerous? Because then people aren't going to use it. So that's one of the things we talked a lot about through the active transportation plan, and something we continue to talk about sort of in the transportation department, and what we can do to mitigate some of even those perceptions.
Yeah. And of course, Summit County has some diverse communities, Colville, Snyderville, yes. Kimball Junction, South Summit communities. Talk about how you do approach these differences and some of these perceived concerns that users have.
Yeah, and so that was actually a pretty big challenge for us, because we got quite a bit of participation from our basin area communities, but North and South Summit, the public participation was maybe not as high as we had wanted. So I think, especially in the North Summit area, it's more of just continuing to keep that dialogue open with the community, but also not planning for things such as roadways that would prevent putting in walking, biking safety facilities in the future. In South Summit, a lot of what we heard is the need for sidewalks, especially as students are trying to access that school complex there. So that's a lot of what was talked about in South Summit.
Yeah, and so how do you see these facilities rolling out over the years? Is there a timeline associated with it? And will you look for the county to put in place requirements for, you know, developers to include these kinds of facilities? I mean, what happens now?
Sure, yeah, it's really sort of a multi-pronged approach. Part of it, absolutely, is that we wanted to create these design recommendations for these safe walk bike facilities, and those are incorporated into the draft plan. And then our planning department has the intention of further refining those so that they can eventually be codified, and pointing to that code and saying to developers, this is our standard. You must, at a minimum, do this. If you can, do more. So that's one piece of it. And then on the other hand, we created a list based on our list of, I think, is just around 60 facilities that we think we need. We had a prioritization process that created a priority list of these facilities. And the intention from staff is to work from that list and say, when we have money, when we have a project going on in the same area that maybe has another funding source, when a grant opportunity comes up, we work from this list and sort of try and pick it off one by one. In addition, all of our county offices, whether that's public works, engineering, planning, transportation, we want to keep this priority list in mind and always be referring back and seeing how we can achieve some of these projects. Finally, as staff, we have these performance measures, and every couple of years, we go back to the list and look at these performance measures and see how we're doing, how we performed, and whether, because of existing conditions, we need to sort of reprioritize. Like, has something come up that would maybe move another project that scored lower up on the list? Or conversely, do we need to sort of put another project off because maybe there's a roadway rehab coming down the pipeline in 3 years, and we know we can get it done in 3 years. Really attacking it sort of from every angle to make sure that we're achieving some of our goals.
Okay, and we're running out of time here. I've got another minute, but I do want to ask about the crossing at SR 224 by the Blue Roof, Silver Spring, Sun Peak
yep.
area crossing. That has been a concern for a lot of residents for a very long time. And
yes.
you had mentioned safety data that you've pulled. You've also talked about perceived risks and whether those perceived risks are real or not. Can you kind of talk about that area in context to that discussion?
Yeah, so that's actually a great example of a perceived safety risk. So when we looked at the crash data going back, I believe, 10 years, there was no reported collisions between pedestrians and vehicles. going on 224. There was one collision, but it occurred actually on Silver Springs Drive with a driver turning off 224. However, as I said, if parents or people in, on, you know, the neighborhood side say, I perceive that that looks dangerous to me and I wouldn't let my child cross, does that then make it dangerous? And this is an ongoing discussion. And as a matter of fact, we had a great discussion with UDOT and the school yesterday, and we have a plan for moving forward and how we're going to continue to work with the community on that intersection and some of the improvements we can make in the immediate term and some of the additional data collection and analysis we can do moving forward, again, to improve on the perceived safety of that intersection.
Right. And you've only talked about people colliding with vehicles, but there is a fairly high number of vehicle collisions right at that intersection. Is that correct? Or
actually, no, that's not correct. Even vehicle collisions are very low based on the type of roadway and the intersection that it is.
Okay. But relatively low.
But when they do occur, it's low damage. It's, you know, bumper to bumper collisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. I appreciate you calling in this morning. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And that's Caroline Rodriguez. She is the Summit County Regional Transportation Planning Manager. And next up, we have Kate Wilson, Director of Sustainability for Vail, and she'll be joining us on the line to talk about how they're doing with their goals of net zero by 2030. So stay with us.
Hi, I'm Cy Hutt, and we are proud supporters of KPCW. If you're looking for a high-quality hospital, you don't need to look further than the county line. Intermountain Park City Hospital and Heber Valley Hospital both offer access to the latest technology and equipment so you can receive the right care in the right place at the right time. Intermountain Park City Hospital and Heber Valley Hospital, healing for life.
Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Good morning. It is 8:45. I've got Kate Wilson, Director of Sustainability for Vail, on the line. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's just start off by talking about this report that just came out this week, stating that last season, it's an internal Vail report that states that $3.1 million in grants were given to local Park City organizations, and that you, as an organization, tend to focus on environmental sustainability and youth programs. Can you kind of give a quick overview of those programs that you supported last year in Park City?
Sure. So just, this is part of our broader enterprise-wide commitment to zero effort, which is our bold sustainability goal to have zero net operating footprint by 2030. And it has three components, zero net emissions, zero waste to landfill, and zero net operating impact to forest and habitat. And then that's also part of our EPIC Promise program, which is our corporate responsibility platform. So the report that you mentioned that we're really excited to have released earlier this week does sort of cover all of that for the broader enterprise. And yes, specifically to Park City within that report, we proudly announced that we provided $3.1 million to 36 nonprofits and almost 1,500 hours of volunteering time. So some of those are giving to the Mountain Trails Foundation through the guest donation program, the Children's Justice Center, so that grant supports education and outreach programming around ending child abuse. And then PC Tops is another example. It's a grant supporting child care subsidies for children from low and moderate income families, all local there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's talk about the waste efforts, the waste reduction efforts. It's involved several things. One is a composter system that you are using. I guess it's based in Salt Lake City. And then another is engaging your employees and having them participate in the efforts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the zero waste to landfill pillar is arguably the hardest part of Commitment to Zero. Operating in obviously very diverse geographic and rural mountain areas across the country and you know, it becomes very challenging. So actually the highlight of our program this year was that we increased our waste diversion at the enterprise-wide level from 37% to 44% waste diversion. And we have a goal next year to hit 50% diversion across the whole company. And in Park City, you know, honestly, at Park City Mountain was really the highlight of this goal this year. So you mentioned, you know, a big uptick in our composting efforts, and we're really, really proud of that. So we did partner with the Wasatch Resource Recovery Center in Salt Lake City, which just came online this year. And really, it was an amazing partnership, and we were able to reimagine the way that we move waste around and on and off our mountain. And we were able to divert 221 tons from landfill to this digester. And really what happens there is that, you know, they capture the methane, and they will also provide bio-rich fertilizer to sort of local farmers. So it's a great example of closing the loop. And then you also mentioned our employees. And so, you know, for me, really, it's an honor to get to do this job and to work with the passionate employees that we have. And they were pivotal to this effort. So, you know, you think about the way that you, you know, if you're having a meal at 10,000 feet, right, how did the food get up there? And if you throw your banana peel away at lunch, thinking about all the things that have to happen to actually get that to a composting facility is pretty complicated. So this year we were able to switch the Canyonside all over to Vail Resorts employees doing the busing. So instead of having our guests tromping around in their ski boots and trying to figure out what goes in what bin, we took that on ourselves to make sure that we got everything in the right place and that we're able to divert as much waste as possible. So for this next season, we are going to do the same thing on the Park City side. So we look forward to, you know, even more diversion coming specifically out of Park City. And that is attributable, really, honestly, to our super passionate employees who care about the environment and want to make an impact in their job.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congratulations on that effort. And so it sounds like the whole resort in Park City will be having Vail employees busing rather than those of us who are clomping around. So I'm sure people will really appreciate that.
Yes, that is certainly the goal for this next season. Yeah. So we're excited about that.
So quickly, I just have a minute more. You mentioned emissions as being something that is part of your three-tiered effort. And I'm wondering, how do you calculate in looking at where employees who are coming in on a seasonal basis, where they're located in each of the resort communities, both for Canyons and for Park City Mountain, and just what the corporation is looking at for, you know, including and offering employee housing that, you know, allows for people to not get in their cars and drive to work every day during that time period?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think, you know, for Commitment to Zero, we're focusing first and foremost on sort of getting our whole operations in order. So we're making sure we're looking at the biggest impact that we have. So diesel and, you know, our electricity emissions and making sure that we are reducing energy on the ground through our energy efficiency projects and our $5 million we spent over the past 2 years to do that. So we really have been focusing primarily on those things first because they are the biggest impact, as well as waste, actually, because it's a huge contributor. Landfills are a huge contributor to climate change. And then we also absolutely are looking at proximity of housing. What can we do within the housing? So can we make sure that employees also have those opportunities to, we're doing, you know, lighting retrofits in the housing. Can we also make sure that they have proper, you know, composting and recycling and landfill bins within their own living accommodations so that they're part of our program? And then, yeah, we're certainly looking at, you know, we're rolling out a new carpooling initiative this year and options for rideshare and things like that. So it's certainly something that's on our radar.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we're out of time today, but maybe we can bring you back as we get closer to the season kicking off and kind of get down into the nitty gritty of some of those options and how people can participate. So thank you so much.
I would love that. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Thank you.
Bye now. That's Kate Wilson, Director of Sustainability with Vail Resorts. And next up, we have our final guests for this morning, and it's Tom Piccamole with the film Shelter and Thomas Delfino, who is one of the featured athletes in the program, in the show that is playing tonight. And we've got them here in studio. I guess you gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, thank you very much for having us today.
Yes, okay. So I've got Tom and Thomas. Hi, Thomas. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Thomas is highlighted in the program as one of the pro snowboarders. And you're here to talk about this debut here in Park City of the film Shelter and the human-powered journey through the remote sections of the Alps, exploring the region's historic huts and addressing the impacts of climate change. So sounds like a great project.
Yes, exactly. So, yes. Last winter, we've been traveling around the Alps, like closer to our home country than we usually do to film a snowboard movie. And so the aim was really to explore our garden, going to some new places, using those mountain huts, which are pretty remote, and some are easier than others to access, but some are quite hard to access. You need to hike a lot. And we tried to cut our CO2 footprint by using as much as possible public transportation and trains. So the systems in the Alps, and especially in Switzerland and France, is really developed. So you can access a lot of valleys and stuff with train and buses, actually.
Yeah, so you've accomplished this. Now, was it starting in Annecy, France, that you began the project?
So I live in Grenoble, which is... Okay. Next to Annecy, and the other riders were dispatched. Like Matt, who is at the origin of this project, lives in Geneva in Switzerland, and so it's really easy for me from Grenoble to go to Geneva, take just a train ride, and then we meet up in Geneva and go further in the mountain from there, you know, and go to meet our friends. And it's funny, one of the mission we did, I started super early in Grenoble and ended up at the end of Switzerland, you know, stepping out of the train with my snowboard and my snowboard boots, just starting to hike from the train station.
Okay. Now, let's talk with Tom Piccamole. Hope I'm getting that right, Tom.
That's correct.
So you are with the film company, with the film and with the organizing company that is behind the film. Can you talk a little bit about that?
More specifically, I'm working for the clothing company who sponsors the movie. So we're making organic and recycled and biosourced products. So trying to be as eco-friendly as possible in the product conception, sourcing, and distribution. And to help spreading our message, we wanted to work on the movie. So for 3 years now, we've been sponsoring movies which were relating adventures, expeditions in the mountains, and spreading an eco and friendly message at the moment. We've been working with a producer called Almo Film, who was doing all the logistic and technical behind the movie, who hired all the filming crew, the videographer, photographers, and send them all together in the mountains with the writers to document all those crazy adventures.
So did the film crews also approach this as a sort of zero net emissions effort, hauling around their equipment and hiking and following you around to get this kind of footage?
Yeah, exactly. So all our film crew was traveling with us, and when we had to hike for hours to reach a hut, they were carrying all their gear. Like sometimes we spent, for example, a week in a hut. And so we had to carry all the food plus all the equipment for all the crew. So it was heavy backpacks.
And you'd stay in huts, which is also a pretty developed system in the European Alps.
Yeah, exactly. So we are lucky that in our mountains, there are plenty of huts which are open in winter. Some are guarded in the summer, and the door just open in winter, and so you can access them really easily. Sometimes you need a key, but you just go grab it at the local restaurant down in the valley or something like that. And in the hut, you have just the basics, you know, like a wood stove, some wood, some big pot to cook, and blankets, but that's it.
So this Almo Film company, they also participated as... their abilities were with yours in terms of being able to hike and sustain the rigor of climbing up and down mountains and sleeping out in a cold hut, I'm guessing.
Yeah, some huts were really cold.
hauling all of their gear. So how long did it take to make the film?
So it took us 2 months of shooting during the months of February and March. And then all the editing process takes quite a bit of time.
Okay.
Pretty much all the summer. And the movie was ready for our first premiere, which was in Annecy, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're kind of on the real premiere list here. Well, so the company Colesport has been has contributed to the project Protect Our Winters, and they intend to donate $5,000 to that effort. Talk a little bit about your relationship with that organization, and will there be proceeds from this film going to that organization as well?
So Protect Our Winter is an organization which was partner of our movie. And so I'm a POW writer for France, and actually all the writers who are in the movie, they're POW representatives, POW ambassadors. And so, yeah, we are trying to make the people aware about what's going on right now with climate change and all that. And so we are working for the same with POW, and we're trying to bring awareness.
Okay. Well, so the film is tonight. Tom, can you give us an update on, do you have the details on what's going to happen there? We've just got 1 minute here to go. And
yeah, so the movie is going to start at 7 p.m. We'll start with a little introduction of the movie. Thomas and I are going to talk with the people about why and how we come up with this idea. And at the end of the movie, we're going to also have a little Q&A session in order to have people asking and getting to know a little bit more of the details and intimacy of the process and all of that. So we're very excited and very thankful to Coley and Protect Our Winters and all the supporters of this movie and of this very cool tour here in the U.S.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That's Tom Picamalay and Thomas Delfino
from
the Film Shelter. Appreciate you coming by this morning, and we'll see you tonight.
Thank you very much. See you tonight.
At the Jim Santee. You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It is 9 o'clock.